listener production.
I hit the guardrail on the left-hand side of the road. I rebounded off it, went up an embankment and flipped my car through someone's property.
It's hard to imagine that the accident you've just heard spoken about, that there wasn't some sort of issue around driving too fast, driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol, perhaps even distractions, or another driver on the road doing something unpredictable. Believe it or not, this was just someone doing a drive that they did quite frequently, and the crash took place because they got behind the wheel tired. Hi everyone, I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
Welcome to Keep Your Wheels On, the podcast where you'll hear from real people talking about the mistakes that either resulted in crashing their car or narrowly avoiding a situation that could have been much worse. And along the way, we're going to be joined by some experts to chat about how you can do your best to avoid ending up in a similar situation. Being that this is our first episode, let's introduce ourselves properly. You might know me as Rusty. Greg Rust. I host the Rusty's Garage podcast here at Listener, among others. I've done a bit of motorsport broadcasting over time. And away from the track, I'm a proud dad with two teenage daughters who have just hit the road. So safety and sharing that information with them is something very important.
And I'm Lisa. I've spent over 20 years working in professional motorsport here and abroad, but I've spent the last 10 years working in road safety, developing a simulation game to teach kids how to drive online. It's called My Drive School.
Now, today we could be talking about the effects of alcohol or drugs, distractions, phones and so on, but this subject today is a really important one. Fatigue. Why is it so important?
Well, the Sleep Foundation have actually estimated that if you're awake for more than 17 hours, it's equivalent to being 0.05. Over 20 hours, it goes up to 0.08. Reaction times, your awareness, your focus or anything else is just seriously impaired if you're tired.
Our expert for this episode is Brad Batten, the Liberal member for Berwick in Victoria. He's the Shadow Minister for Police in Victoria, along with other things in his portfolio, including a Shadow Minister for Youth Justice, Crime Prevention and Victim Support. He's on the line. Brad, welcome.
Good morning, Rusty and Lisa. Thank you for having me on.
Probably worth sharing with people too that in that CV I've just rattled off there, you've also been a policeman. So this is, you know, attending accidents, things like that has actually been a very real thing for you. You have firsthand experience with it, don't you?
Yeah, so I spent some time at Dandenong and at Paran in the Victoria Police and then some, we'll call it holiday duties down in Inverloch for a short period as well. But yeah, went to enough accidents in a short period of time to last a lifetime.
When we talk fatigue, what's the kind of first thing that you think about around its dangers?
It's actually interesting, and I can speak personally from previous to being a police. I was a prison officer, and when I think fatigue, I can think about a 16-hour shift and driving home and rolling my mother-in-law's car and writing off a car. It's actually what you were just saying and just listening to that clip. I remember approaching a corner and then I remember gravel going past my windscreen. So it's a pretty scary thing and it's a very dangerous element of driving these days when people take that risk of getting behind the wheel when they're tired.
Lots of lessons in that for you, Brad, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And it's a huge thing in the roads. And it was only, I think, 2 years ago, Pauline Smith was an ambulance officer up in the Mallee and up near Horsham and was driving home after a night shift and she lost her life on the way home. So she's an ex-police officer, so she knew the risks and people still managed to get in the car. And I think, you know, coppers will turn around and say they won't drink drive, but they'll do a night shift and drive home. So it's emergency services workers as well as night shift workers. There's so many in the community that are willing to do it. And I don't think it's an intentional thing. It's just not something they think about.
All right, let's get back to meeting the person behind this story now and find out how they came to be in this fatigue situation.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm 31 years old. 10 years ago, I drove tired and I've spent the last 10 years of my life sitting in a wheelchair. I got my first car when I was around 18 years old. My dad bought it off my grandparents. It was a little green Suzuki Swift. Ran off the smell of an oily rag, little manual thing. It was kind of like driving a go-kart. And honestly, I wish I still had that car to this day. I was living rurally and I learned to drive from the age of around 5 or 6 years old. So I was rip-roaring, ready to go. I've been driving a car every single day of my life pretty well. When you live rurally anyway, you've always got to commute long distances on backcountry roads. I was doing that to school. I was doing that to work, you know, going and seeing friends. I've got a massive family. I've got 11 other brothers and sisters. So it was a lot of time on road every single day. The first year of my 20s was my busiest, I suppose. My friends used to always say to me, "Where's Sam?" No one knows, because I was everywhere all at once. But at that stage, when I was living rurally and working in Canberra, I was working two jobs. So I was working 5 days a week on a farm, sometimes seven. And at the particular time of year that I had my accident, I was working 7 day weeks. I was working 12-hour plus days, but I was also working 3 nights a week at a nightclub in the middle of Canberra. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. And that was my reality for many months. And I was doing that mainly to save money. And it just got to the point of complete burnout and not understanding my body, but also, if I'm being honest, not caring. The day of the accident, it was actually 3 days, if I'm being completely honest. So Thursday, 12 hours on the farm, then the Thursday night at the nightclub, go back into the car at 4:30 in the morning, head back home, hour and a half's drive, another 12-hour day on the farm, hour and a half's drive back to the club on the Friday night. And then the Saturday, I was not actually working. I was heading to a mate's place. I had a job this particular day, and that was to be sober driver for four of my best mates. We were heading to the Harden picnic races, and it's always a fat day. You know, whether you're drinking or not, you're surrounded by all the people that you love the most pretty well, whether it be family, friends, you know, new people. This particular day, it was just beautiful. So we did that. We drove from Canberra to Harden for the picnics, and come day's end, my friends were absolutely blotto. And I thought, we'll get some food in their bellies, we'll go to the pub. And then I realised my job as a sober driver was done, and they were catching the courtesy bus for the rest of the night. And my plan was to go home and go to bed. I was trying to make some good decisions, you know, actively trying. And, you know, long story short, I guess at this point, I got lured back to work in Canberra after actually taking that shift off with double pay for that shift. And I thought, stuff it, I'm dressed, I'm in my black dress, I'll put my Connies on and I'm ready for a full night shift behind the bar. So I drove back to Canberra that night. Another full night shift behind the bar, and I finished working around 5:30 on the Sunday morning. Had the best night in the nightclub ever, and I was running off the thing that I loved the most, right? My drug of choice, I guess, at this time was an adrenaline rush, and I could feel the music pumping in my chest still. I drove out to Gold Creek service station, put some fuel in my car, got a bite to eat and a coffee, funnily enough. I was really ready for my Sunday day. When I say I could feel the music in my chest, I really could, and I was pumping, I was bopping on my way to the car. Like I had slept for 3 days, but I hadn't. Zero. And I headed on back out the Barton Highway, heading towards Warren Bateman Yass direction, and out like a light.
Frightening consequences there, Brad. It's probably worth talking about the reality around, we've all got busy, we've got jam-packed lives, but you make a decision sometimes to jump behind the wheel, A, thinking you're bulletproof because you're behind the wheel of a car. And when you're a young person like that, that you are capable of these sort of prolonged periods with minimal sleep, it is a great reminder of the fact that you need to make a good choice, don't you?
It's actually interesting. Listening to Sam's story, I think you could hear that daily. So Sam's not alone. Some are lucky and some are unlucky in how they get there. And Rusty, I heard you say before you've got two daughters. I've got two daughters, one 20 and one 18. So they're both in the driving age. My 20-year-old lives in Swan Hill. So when I listen to that story, I can guarantee I'll be playing this podcast to her to say, you know, you've got to make these decisions as well. People don't think about it either. They get the symptoms of fatigue in the car, but they do everything they can to overcome it rather than pull over and have a rest. And it puts them at risk. It puts everyone at risk. It's just not worthwhile.
To both of you, this probably sounds like a really simple question. How does being tired impact how people are able to respond to things? I mean, clearly you're not as sharp with steering inputs, with braking and things like that. They're obvious ones, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. So you look at any, you know, anything that happens on the road, or you're going on a road that you don't know well enough, or, you know, you're not focused, you're not aware, and your reaction times are a lot delayed. And, you know, but young people, they just think they're invincible. I've got two sons, obviously, in the driving age as well. And boys are crashing 4-1 because, again, they think they're invincible. Mm. And they don't actually think, oh, I can stay awake for, you know, 24 hours. It's not a problem. It is.
Why do we think that people talk so much about the other factors of accidents, shall we say? But being tired just doesn't seem like it carries that same headline.
I don't think it's quantifiable in terms of you can't gauge. There's not a test you can do, you know, to go, how tired are you?
But yet you rattled off some statistics at the start of this pod around how its equivalence, Brad, is like driving under the influence of alcohol. It's a serious, serious impairment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is 100%. And Lisa actually just said it then. There's no test for it. Well, there actually is. There's plenty of tests. The problem is they're not tests that we can assess on the Channel 7 news, but micro naps. We hear of people nodding off at the wheel and then they turn the music up or open their window or the old, and I would say one of the most famous ones, you know, you see people doing this. If I see anyone doing that when I'm in the car, I would say to them straight away, you're tired, pull over. So there's lots of tests that you can do on yourself, but it's a matter of it's a self-test.
What Brad did then, for those of you listening to the podcast, he rubbed the back of his neck. So, you know, it's an indicator that tiredness is setting in. I would imagine as a police officer, you've been to countless incidents caused by fatigue. How many of those in your mind would have been avoidable?
Probably a simple one, this one. I'm going to say 100% of fatigue accidents are avoidable. 100% of drink driving accidents are avoidable. The unavoidable things on the road, like it might be a kangaroo jumping out in front of you, that was unavoidable. In saying that, some of the ones where the kangaroo jumped out on regional roads, you could have avoided if you weren't tired and half asleep. So a lot of these things have to be taken in consideration. But if you don't take the rest when you need it, any accident you have from then on was 100% avoidable.
You would have heard Sam mention there that she felt okay getting behind the wheel and doesn't recall falling asleep. Let's find out what happens next.
I didn't feel tired and I don't recall nodding off. I fell asleep and I hit the guardrail on the left-hand side of the road. I rebounded off it, went up an embankment and flipped my car through kind of like an old school public pool type fence that was part of someone's property. And I landed my car about a metre in front of quite a large gum tree. I was then found by two nurses who were on their way home from their shift at the Canberra Hospital, which is pretty lucky. And then a builder, I believe, who was on his way to work. I was then attended to by New South Wales Fireys, New South Wales Highway Patrol and New South Wales Ambulance Service, put into the back of the ambulance, a few minor injuries. And we headed back down the Barton Highway where I'd just come from, heading towards the Canberra Hospital and where I had accident number two. So accident number two was I was obviously in the back of the ambulance and the driver of the ambulance had also fallen asleep and she rear-ended a car that was stopped at red traffic lights from 90 k's an hour to a dead stop whilst was still on the Barton Highway at a pretty large intersection and I went headfirst into the backs of the front seats. I hold no animosity, no anger, no nothing towards any of the emergency service workers because, as we all know, they're pushed to the absolute brink. And accidents happen, you know. And what I've taken on board over the last 10 years is I was the one that made the decisions over those 3 days leading up to that first accident that made that whole situation unfold. Initially, I wasn't able to take that on board and take responsibility for that, but the moment that I could was the moment that I, one, felt most free, but then was able to actually talk about it. The last thing I remember is leaving Gold Creek Service Station and turning onto the Barton Highway. And then the next thing I vividly remember is being in the hospital and seeing the hospital lights flick as I was being wheeled down the hallway. That is it. And then from there, for the first few weeks of being in hospital, it's quite blurry. I lost a lot of my long-term memories and I struggled to recall things short-term. I write a diary one day for the next day so I can, you know, recall conversations and bits and pieces, being able to get back to people. Certainly changed me as a person, let's just say that. So I ended up with a brain stem and a spinal cord injury and I'm completely paralysed down my right-hand side. So I have absolutely no sensation or movement from about halfway up my neck or just above my collarbone all the way down to my toes and my right-hand side. So been in a wheelchair for the last 11 years this October. It's affected my, you know, sexual function. It's affected my ability to regulate my body temperature. It's affected my ability to use the bathroom properly. You know, I've got to rely on people to cut my food up. You know, I had to learn how to tie my shoelaces with one hand, which is, you know, great in the grand scheme of things because I've had to actually use my brain. And as time has gone on, I've had to deal with overuse injuries and various amount of surgeries. And yeah. If I get injured on my right-hand side of my body, I get what's called AD, so autonomic dysreflexia, and it, you know, I experience pain in different ways. I might get headaches, I might have high blood pressure, you know, fast heart rate, et cetera. I feel sick, and it means that I take a long time to heal. It's meant that I've had to learn how to redo life from the start again. You know, I've had to learn how to dress myself and brush my teeth and put my hair up. More often than not, I have a bad hair day. because I struggled to do that. I spent 20 years of my life dominantly right-handed, so I lost that ability. And I always say I lost that ability because I made one shit decision.
That is frightening, and there is a lot to take in here to digest. Let's start with the first accident that Sam had. Not drunk, no animal leapt out in front of the car, as you two were saying before. Just simply got behind the wheel, having had no sleep in the order of 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, nobody should be driving after 3 days without any sleep. A power nap at that point, 15-minute, 20-minute power nap, could have avoided that situation. Nobody can actually really function properly with no sleep.
Lisa, you've got a little in the way of statistics here, just on the fears kids have in relation to a serious accident.
It's actually been researched that kids are actually more scared of becoming a quadriplegic or a paraplegic and ending up in a wheelchair than what they are of actually dying.
Mm.
So stories like Sam's are absolutely invaluable to get out there.
Brad, shift work is a reality for lots of people, for many of your constituents, I would imagine. That's something they need to do to make their world go round, for their family and so on. But at the same time, you have to be very conscious of the impact that can have.
It's difficult because people have to work. And as Sam was saying there, two jobs. This is a massive issue because you know in your mind you just want to get home and go to bed because that's the right outcome so you can be awake for the next day. And I think the scariest part of that was Sam was saying she didn't feel the consequences of that tiredness because it's probably set in over a couple of days where it became almost the normal for her body to try and operate that way. And eventually, we all know your body just shuts down, and that's obviously what happened. She's just shut down and the body says enough's enough and time for a sleep. Doesn't matter where you are.
Mm. People talk about a microsleep. I mean, you obviously get to a point where you drift off and you don't realise you're going to sleep while you're behind the wheel, do you?
It's worth going on YouTube and just Google the TAC ad with the Volkswagen, and I think they're the hardest hitting ads that we saw. And the Volkswagen, his eyes just close a little bit and it's like you're in his vision. It just closes for a fraction and comes back open. Now, if you're doing 100 Ks an hour and you're doing that just for a couple of seconds, you're traveling 250, 300 metres in that time. Now, if you switch across the other side of the road, which happens in this ad, and he goes under a semi-trailer, these things are real. They're not pretend. So a micro sleep can make a difference between turning a corner or not, hitting a tree or not, or avoiding something coming the other way.
We'd like to think that people make good choices around alcohol consumption and choosing not to drive or having a designated driver, whatever it might be. Why do you think people continue to drive when they feel tired? Why isn't there that moment where we stop and acknowledge, okay, I've been working for 3 days here, maybe I shouldn't drive today?
I think, again, it's nearly like there's no real test or enforcement around it. So they think, oh, I can manage that. It's okay. I'll do it. I just need to get home.
Mm.
You know, and everybody always just wants to get home. But the problem being with when they're that tired, they're not going to get home.
Sam's story is in two parts, clearly. Can we move to the second half of it now? This surely shows how widespread this issue is. To think that you would be in the safe hands of those very good people in emergency services who do amazing things for all of us on a daily basis, but they're not immune to this either. They're in, Brad, the same boat in some respects, aren't they?
Yeah, and look, you'll currently see at the moment one of the biggest campaigns going around from the ambulance officers here in Victoria is you'll see on the back of the ambulances where they're from. It'll actually say this ambulance is from Pakenham, etc. And I remember my daughter asked me recently, why are they doing that? It's because they start their shift in officer, and then if they go to the Monash Hospital and there's a code one, they might be called to the other side of Dandenong. And if they go to that next hospital, they can move so far away from their stations. If you're on night shift and you finish at 7 a.m. and you're an hour away from your unit, it's a long drive back when you've been awake for 14 hours moving people around from hospital to hospital, and we're putting them at greater risk. So we need to also consider how we educate not just the staff on the road but the ambulance service itself to not do this so we can ensure that we protect our ambulance and emergency service workers as well.
You've just gone there, which is great, about what we need to think about or what can perhaps be done to combat this. Is fatigue a serious issue in the public service?
Huge issue. Look, and particularly in emergency services, and you know, this is not a dig at any of the emergency service workers, but if you're a copper on from 3 to 11, so you do the 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. shift, and you happen to arrest someone at 10:50 at night because it was the last job you had, and all of a sudden you've got to interview them, take them through the process, you could end up at court with them at 8, 9 in the morning, and then you're going to drive home after that. Now, the police themselves will have a policy that says you can ask for a lift home, you can request someone to give you a lift home. But I'll guarantee you nearly every copper will go, look, it's only 20 minutes down the road. I'll just jump in my car and drive home. I just need to go to bed. So it's a mentality and it's a thing of they need to have the courage to ask. We need support for this. Almost make it a rule that you'll get a lift home if you've done X amount of overtime.
I'd like to highlight what Brad said there. That is not a dig at any of our emergency services people. It's actually highlighting the care that we want for them, given the long hours they often do and when they're confronted with that situation. Let's circle back here to Sam and the next part of the story about how this has impacted her life. And I do want to give you a little warning that this part of the conversation does discuss suicide. So if there is a part of this convo that causes you any concern at all, just a reminder, for example, that Lifeline does have a service that you can call anytime on 13 11 14. Let's get back to Sam now.
I've spent all of my 20s and now going into my 31st year sitting in a wheelchair, and it's just mind-blowing. I've spent a third of my life sitting down. It's crazy. I used to get really emotional about it. And last year when it was my sort of 10-year anniversary, if that's what you want to call it, it was really hard. I had my 30th birthday, my 10-year anniversary in the same year. And at the time of my 10th anniversary, I kind of just went rogue. I didn't talk to anyone for a couple of days. I just had to go in and kind of deal with my own shit. I've certainly experienced my fair share of hard times over the last 10 years. And immediately, it was, I'm not going to say fun. Funny is not the right word, but I was surrounded by a lot of people and, you know, it was all kind of lots of change and lots of things happening. There was lots of appointments and lots of this and lots of that. But when the novelty of the situation wore off and life just started to move on for myself and everyone around me was when I realized, wow, this is what this is. And then throw in on top of that a legal situation that lasted for 7.5 years. That was probably the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my life, and that's a big call. I never ever wanted to do that, but when I realised that, you know, a Povo Pack wheelchair was in around the $15,000, $16,000 mark, and I had to have a variety of different surgeries and medications and physio and occupational therapy, and list goes on and on and on for days and days and days, and I had $0 and zero help, that was going to be something that I had to do, didn't want to do, but had to do. And I really felt initially that I was going to be taking the driver into a legal situation. I didn't want to do that. But at the end of the day, I realised, no, it was an insurance company side of things and I needed this to be able to live a normal life. Well, normal in brackets, an average life. There was hard times around that in itself. But when I realised I couldn't be, you know, the sports person that I was and I couldn't do my clay target shooting, I couldn't do my line dancing with my oldies and I couldn't go out dancing like I used to with my friends and, you know, will anyone love me like this again? There was a time where I've only confessed this to a group of women at a women's day event in Condobolin only a few weeks ago when I was asked a pretty raw question that I had tied my hands and my feet together with zip ties and tried to throw myself into a pool. And that was a pretty down time. And it was just the fact that I realised that life was going to be pretty different and I couldn't mentally deal with that at the time. And I was trying to uphold everyone's hope that things were going to get better whilst also managing this legal side of things, managing the medical side of things, which was just so difficult in itself. I was trying to keep everyone around me happy and I couldn't do that because I couldn't keep myself happy. But from that moment, I realised, shit, I don't want to die. I want to be here and I want to help people understand that when you find yourself in a situation like this, it's not all doom and gloom, right? It's not fun, but it's not all doom and gloom and you can really create an incredible life out the back of adversity. And then if I'm being honest, right now, you know, as I'm heading into my 31st year of life and all of my friends are having kids and getting married and, you know, I've got a partner, a long-term partner, I can't have kids. Not that I want them, but sometimes I feel really excluded from those groups after already feeling excluded from my friends doing, you know, a variety of different sports or hiking, whatever, the list goes on. I could talk for hours about that, but I'm really feeling that now. So it was in the beginning initially, lots of years feeling really insecure about myself in regards to my partner or my friends, that maybe I'm not enough. And that's just normal life though, right? That's not too much to do with my accident, but it's definitely something that's a little vein inside my own head. You know, I'm not this tall, long, leggy blonde that I used to be. I'm now seated and I have a very flat ass. And, you know, it's just the ebbs and flows of life a little bit, and it does hurt. It seriously does hurt. But if I would sit there, if I were to sit there and wallow in that, I wouldn't be living the life that I'm living now.
I'd like to thank Sam for what she shared there, the brutal reality of it, the gravity of it, and I hope that it strikes a chord with many people listening about what can happen, because it is far more than just the car crash here, whether it's insurance claims, ending up in a wheelchair, the impact on family, friends, and so on. That is, for me, the real thing you need to pause and consider here around tiredness and driving fatigue. That can happen.
There's so many takeaways in there, but I mean, her amazing resilience to actually come through this, that really wants to now be a voice to try and help other people not to make those poor decisions that she did. She's taken full responsibility for it and now can actually talk to people in a really engaging way that people can relate to because, I mean, let's be honest, we've all done it. I know I've done it, especially, you know, when I was that young, travelling from Sydney to Melbourne all the time. Absolutely. Sometimes we'd be driving down through the night, you know, you'd put the window down, all that stuff, music up, whatever. It's not worth it. Sam is a perfect example of that.
Sam was alone. Are fatigue crashes less likely if there are passengers in the car, or is that a false sense of security?
Anecdotally, I would think there'd be more chance that you'd fall asleep if you were by yourself, because when you've got somebody with you, you can say, hey, you know, talk to me, and you can actually be having a conversation the whole time to try and keep you awake. But still, that's still not good enough. If you are that tired, you just need to pull over.
Are we doing enough at a government level, Brad, to highlight the dangers of this? We hear about drink driving, we hear about, you know, phone use, and that's, they quite rightly get their share of airtime because they're bloody serious things. But what about fatigue?
I don't think we do. I think we should be doing more in the way of advertising and education in fatigue. But I actually am a big supporter of, we need to bring back the old style TAC adverts that were very hard hitting. But there's no use in putting them on Channel 7 anymore, because let's be honest, I know my kids don't watch Channel 7. They need to be on YouTube and areas that kids are looking at. People say they're a bit offensive, some of these ads, but let me tell you, they do work. So we should be bringing them back to make sure at the end of the day we can keep our road toll down.
In our new development for My Drive School, we've actually got a full module on fatigue.
Excellent.
And kids can actually be doing the program, so going through the course, driving along, hazards will come out like they do in any of the other programs, but the whole screen blackens like you're falling asleep, and to genuinely demonstrate the effects, and they will basically crash nearly every time if they're driving through this course when they're fatigued.
Great work, illustrating what can happen.
Yes.
Let's get back to Sam as we near the end of our podcast here. And, you know, she's already reflected on some pretty low moments, but there's obviously a story of adversity, overcoming that. Let's hear some reflections on where she is right now.
Overall, I feel pretty good. I feel pretty powerful in the sense that I've had to barrack for myself over the years, and I've really come out of my shell, and that had a lot to do with the legal situation and really backing myself with my team in that sense. And I feel powerful that I can now talk about a lot of things openly. I can openly say to a stranger that that tough time where I tried to take my life happened, because it is a powerful thing. I feel like I've got my business in check and my relationship is really great, and I have a really incredible family, and if I want to travel, I can travel. All those shit things happen with that. You just deal with it, you know. So starting my business, Obal Dust, it's in regards to wool and agriculture and things like that, and that come out of a time of a really difficult mental space, not feeling connected to a community, not wanting to be in the community that I was a part of, disability. And it's really enabled me to come out of my shell, share my story with others, and allow other people to share their story with me. And that's enabled me to grow as a person and feel a little more accepted in life. I've always had this, my business is called Oh Bulldust for a reason, right? I fuck it pretty well. And I feel good. I can't change this. It is what it is. And if you can't make something good out of this situation, then life's going to be pretty tough for a very long time. I do drive now, and I'm very thankful for that because I had like 18 months where I was relying on everyone for everything, you know, wiping my ass, helping me get dressed, driving me here, there and everywhere. Went and got my license, got my car modified, which was a lot of money, you know, in excess of $10,000. I didn't have a car because my car was crumbled up in a yard somewhere. And it's been one of the best things ever to have my independence back. But the funny thing is I found myself on the road more now than I was then. But now with the mindset of, okay, if I've got a long drive ahead, where can I pull up to, one, go to the bathroom, but to have a sleep, and being so comfortable with being able to sleep in a car park somewhere in the car, if it means saving my life and saving others. My first thought in that sense is other people's lives matter so much. When you are making a bad decision on the road, you're putting their lives at risk. I don't think the same care factor comes into, you know, driving tired, because being tired is something that we all are every single day. We are so busy every single day because we are having to, you know, meet the cost of living rises, and we're working 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs. But it's because, I think, my opinion, it's because we go to sleep every single day of our lives. You know, more often than not, we're not drinking every single day of our lives to excess. But the day that I had my accident, I may as well have had 20 skewies at the pub and drove my car. That's the situation that my body was in. And people just aren't aware enough of their body shutting down or their body in general. And yes, we need to be able to pay our bills, but we need to be able to get home to our families at night. I was young, and you know, that's a great excuse to lean on, but the vast majority of deaths and injuries that happen on our road are with young people not having the knowledge, not having the understanding, not having the education around the consequences off the back of making a bad decision and continuously making that bad decision. It shouldn't always come down to learning the hard way, like a lot of us do. Being late shouldn't matter. If you need an extra hour or half an hour sleep, get that, because it matters. You know, that might be the very thing that enables you to get home to your loved ones. If you're an hour late to something, that is so much better than not being able to be there at all, because you no longer have a life, or you've just taken someone else's. That is certainly my advice. Be late. If you can't manage your time, be late.
It's an amazing story and incredibly well told by Sam. So her life drastically changed, and it seems kind of odd to look at someone becoming bilaterally paralysed as a lucky outcome, but ultimately it could have been a lot worse, as she's alluded to there, around the impact on perhaps another driver or family and so on. Brad, can I go to you here, because policing means that you attend and have attended crashes, I would imagine, during your career. What impact did that have if you, you know, saw a fatality, or perhaps you've even had to go and knock on the door of parents of someone like Sam and deliver the news that they've been involved in a serious accident?
Yeah, attending an accident, 90% of the time you try and switch off. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds horrible, but you try and make it as least emotional as possible at the circumstances, and convince yourself you don't know them. And I think that's a huge challenge when you get there. But the hardest thing in the police force by a country mile is knocking on the door of someone knowing that it's a child that's been killed in a car accident, generally at 18 to 25 year olds. Mm. And you knock on, you don't even need to say anything. When you knock on the door at someone's house at 2 a.m. and they open the door, they know you're not there for anything else. It's the worst experience I think you can ever have. And when you hear, and you can probably, it still hits me today because I had to do it. When you hear people like Sam say the positive outcome where she is, that is when you go and speak to parents who have lost a child due to a car accident at a young age, they would do anything to have their children back, living with a disability, to support them, et cetera, rather than have that copper knock on the door and say, sorry, they're gone and they're not coming back. Look around your Christmas table this year, and I've said this in Parliament plenty of times, and pick which one you want an empty chair at, And I guarantee it's none. So have the discussion every Christmas about fatigue, drink driving, drug driving, being safe on the road and making sure you get home. I think it's a really important discussion we can have at the dinner table every night.
So let's look to some key takeaways. How do we get through to young people and let them know? You've talked about your training system, which is a great start, but they need to understand the gravity of this situation, don't they?
You know, there's really hasn't been a lot of campaigns, as you said, Brad, around fatigue. Because it's not enforceable, you can't sort of, oh, you're doing a, you know, a breathalyzer or this, or you're speeding. There's all those enforcement levels, whereas you can't sort of pull somebody up and go, when was the last time you slept? Do you know, so there's no really enforcement. There's no perceived danger other than the fact that, oh, we might crash like Sam did. So we need a lot more awareness around the fact that this is as dangerous as it's going to get.
And, Brad, I think encouraging kids to self-police each other, if that's the right way of saying it. So that if they've got a mate that they know has worked a late shift and they're all together and so on, stopping them and saying, hey, don't drive this evening or don't drive home today. You need a bit of time off.
I think the way to do that too, Rusty, is actually through sports clubs so we can have discussions at those community groups. But like everything in life is rope learning. We learn things by getting it repeated to us over and over again. And I'm not saying this is the answer, but during your 120 hours, I've just had two go through the 120 hours. It was effectively just driving, like you took them out.
Yes.
You're teaching them to get their license. But why can't we have a program in place where every 10 or 20 hours you have a quick questionnaire you've got to do online to send in, which can remind you of the things of drink, driving, fatigue. So it's in their mind continuously. So by the time they get their license, we know they've already done 10 effective short quizzes on it that makes them think about these decisions before they make them.
Final comments from both of you. How can people, particularly young people, avoid what happened to Sam?
Yeah, I think parents have got a huge responsibility to talk about it with their kids. I was very strict with my kids with their driving. One of them did 180 hours and one did about 140. And when we were out there, I just say to them, for the first effective 100 hours, I'm teaching you how to get your license. And for the last 20 hours onwards, you're learning to drive. I'm not telling you how to do it, but I will pull you up when you make a mistake. And that's when we started to talk about things which we still talk about now. My 20-year-old, when she comes down from Swan Hill, before she leaves, I say to her, if you get tired on the way down, pull over, grab something to eat, have a sleep. I don't care. We'll wait for dinner. There's no stress. And you have to be confident enough to say that. But the challenge is dads and mums can do it without a problem. I want her partner to do it, who's in the car with her, who's 19 years old, to go, you know what, we're tired, just pull over, rather than go, oh, let's just swap and I'll take the risk.
Well, I think we need a lot more awareness and education for teenagers, especially in their learning to drive years, around that fatigue is actually every bit as dangerous as what drinking or speeding is.
Brad, we're grateful to you for your time today. Somehow we've managed to avoid you getting called into Parliament, and it's been wonderful for you to be here with us to share those very real-world insights as both a police officer and then now what you're doing from a political perspective. Thank you so much for coming on the pod today.
No worries, and thank you both for actually allowing me to come on and to get this message out there. And if you can please pass on to Sam as well for her to get that story out there. I want to assure people it will change people's views and it will save lives. So people like her should be put up as legends in when it comes to protecting people on our roads.
On the next episode of Keep Your Wheels On, we look at how a dirt road or other dodgy driving surfaces can land you in trouble if you don't know what you're doing.
Because this was dirt, it reacted entirely differently. The back of the car just started to swing out towards the edge of the road.
And Greg Murphy, someone who's an expert at handling a car, talks through the skills needed to avoid ending up having an issue.
And so you're driving along, you turn the wheel, and the tyre slips across the surface, or the surface goes with it, and that's what you're feeling.
I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is Keep Your Wheels On. Keep Your Wheels On is a listener production brought to you in partnership with My Drive School. Hosted by me, Greg Rust, and Lisa Scaife. Audio production by Kelly Fulston. And executive producer is Todd Stevens.
The Keep Your Wheels On podcast was funded by the Australian Government.
Listener.